Hello, everyone. This is Luke John Louis, the host of the Deep of Voiceman show. Thanks for joining us today. We have a treat in store for you guys. Our guest is Veronique Vershore, and she's an amazing person, and she provides strategies for business owners, professionals, and families to build and preserve wealth as a financial services professional with New York Life. For over a decade, and she's very intelligent. She, just like me, got her MBA from Baruch College, where she studied international business and industrial and organizational psychology. And she also has an MS in international marketing from the same school, and from the same school as well, a bachelor's in finance. So she's a fellow Baruch alum, which is amazing. I love interviewing fellow Baruch Bearcats, so to speak. And so we're very fortunate to have her here. She's very busy, so she was able to carve out some time in her packed schedule to sit down and have a chat with us, which is amazing. Thank you so much for coming on as a guest. I guess to start off, can you tell us about your background and how you first gravitated towards doing what you do today?
Yes. Thank you, Luke, for having me today. I'm very excited and appreciative. An easy way to remember my name, my name is Veronique Vershore. An easy way to remember is very unique, very sure. So in any case, I was born in Belgium and I grew up in Israel. I also lived in Tokyo, in Paris, and in LA. And now I'm about 20 years in the USA. Now, since I traveled a lot by myself, I did backpacking like many years ago in different countries, and I learned how to manage and reduce my risk. You know, I had to protect myself abroad physically. Also, I learned how to plan and handle my finances, you know, budgeting, saving, and spending wisely. I wanted to make sure that the money that I had would be enough for me. And beside that, all what you mentioned, that I did study at Baruch, and I do speak a few languages that really helped me with my career, choosing my career as a financial professional, as a financial services professional.
Wow. That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your story. And you gave us that nice technique to know how to pronounce your name, which I really like. Very unique, very sure. And, you know, so it's interesting how you've traveled and you've lived in many places. You sort of, I guess, backpacking, as you mentioned, and you have to protect yourself physically. My goodness. Well, and thankfully you were able to do that and survive. And that's amazing. And you had to learn how to budget, of course, and obviously spend money wisely while you were traveling. So my understanding is you were born in Belgium and you spent time growing up in Israel. That's quite an upbringing. And you spent time in Tokyo, Paris, and L.A. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's, you know, I love to travel. I like traveling the world. I want to do more of it. And so that's amazing. And you speak several languages.
I did learn Japanese, and I speak Hebrew and French and English and some Spanish. Yes.
Wow, you know Japanese? That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so I'm curious. Obviously, you learned a lot about, you know, dealing with money because you had to budget, so to speak. and you had to learn how to handle money of different currencies. I can imagine. So that's amazing. And now, obviously, you've been a financial professional for quite some time and having a lot of success with it, of course. Obviously, we all know, we got hit with this pandemic. I'm curious, how would you describe the current state of finance and the industry, and what challenges has the pandemic posed?
So I was thinking a lot about it because, in general, before the COVID, you know, before the pandemic, people were really busy. You know, I'm living in New York, and everybody is going on automatic. No time to think, no time to breathe. Just go, 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 go. Once COVID hit, people were, I think, shocked. They fear. There was uncertainty, and then their mind changed. You know, they realized that, oh, we are mortal. You know, life is precious. There's no guarantees. We don't know what's going to happen in one to the next day. So, and people, you know, unfortunately had to watch their families, some members in their families and friends dying from COVID. So I think naturally they had the urgency to protect their family and to reevaluate their financial planning to make sure that they will have something for now and in the future. Mm. So the thing about it is what's interesting is that the life insurance demand since COVID increased 40%, which is a lot.
Wow.
Yes. And the clients that I've been speaking with, they are able to save more money because they don't go out and all that. So they really are saving their savior now. And so some of them, you know, they want to protect their family, their business. Some of them change jobs, so they have old 401ks that they want roll over, and I can help them with all of that.
Wow. That's amazing, and that's incredible. So I guess in some ways folks in the financial world have been able to thrive, so to speak, because more and more people understand the
yes.
fragility of life. And you mentioned there was a 40% increase in people buying life insurance.
Yes.
That's amazing. And thank God for yeah. And so obviously prior to the pandemic, you said that people had been very busy, but the pandemic mm-hmm. allowed people to kind of slow down, so to speak. They had no choice. But obviously it filled people up with a lot of fear and,
mm-hmm.
and whatnot, but it did allow people to save more money, which is amazing. So there was some, I guess, some good that came out of it. Unfortunately,
yes.
a lot of people have to see family members die, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for describing the current landscape and whatnot. I'm curious, where obviously the pandemic will go away at some point, hopefully sooner rather than later, particularly with the ramped up distribution of vaccines and whatnot. How would you describe, where you see things going in the future, and where do you see yourself in that future?
It seems like right now people are getting used to this new reality. And as you said, we know with the vaccine and all this, the situation will change. But things like that happens all the time. In history, there's always something. Not a recession, it's a depression. And then there was 9/11. And then there's always something that happens. And then wakes up.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get back to their normal, you know, and that's the cycle of life. So I see myself continuing with this call that I have to educate and help people with their financial and insurance needs. And I think that I'm able to leave a legacy in reaching the community, you know. So I'm staying what I'm doing. I'm just going to do more. one day at a time, one person at a time.
Wonderful. And that's amazing. And I think you refer to it as your calling, which is great. It looks like this is something you enjoy doing and you're passionate about. And they say that when you do what you love, you never have to work a day in your life. And and it's interesting. Mark Twain once said, everyone has two birthdays. The day they were born and the day they figure out why. And I think you know both your birthdays, and you know,
yes.
you're you know, you're living your purpose, whatnot. So that is amazing. And obviously you said people have to get used to a new reality.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously it's never going to go back to the way things were before the pandemic. So there's this new normal and whatnot, but you're out there. You're still going to, no matter what, help folks, I guess, build a legacy for themselves,
mm-hmm.
Which is amazing. And obviously there's always been crises, and obviously we've had pandemics before and we've come out of it, you know, of course, and whatnot. And so obviously this too will pass and whatnot, but obviously there'll be a new world, a new normal, but you'll still be out there helping folks with their financial with their financials on the financial side of things. I'm curious, what would you say to people who look at financial services professionals and say that it's unnecessary, they're just a middle person, that people can do this on their own? Why do you think people need a financial professional?
Okay, so I'm thinking that if most people could do it, they would have done it already, right? I think that some people, they try and they succeed, but many fail. You know, people want to make money quickly and become rich. And it's maintaining the situation, right? It's not losing the money. It's maintaining the situation. And dealing with money and health is very emotional, right? So people usually either behave because of fear or because of greed. So I believe that, you know, people need someone that is professional, that they studied, that they have the expertise. And I give all the I delegate my things to the professionals. I go to the dentist and not to somebody else to take my teeth out, right? So I think it's very important. But it's important to find somebody you trust, somebody that will listen, and somebody that will partner with you on the solution, that you guys work together.
Right. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like how you framed it. You mentioned how if it were easy for people to do, most people would have done it, and clearly that's not the case. So many people struggle financially. And you mentioned how so many people want to get rich quick. And obviously that's not really how things go. So you help people with maintaining. You use that word, which I think is amazing. And you talked about the dentist. You go to a dentist, someone who went to school to study dentistry for dental work and whatnot. And so that's so important because obviously this is something you guys study. You have to take tests. Mm-hmm. You have to get a license.
Yes.
It's very regulated and whatnot. So you guys know more about it. Right.
Yes.
And you guys know more about it than the average person. And so so you guys are doing great work helping people. You know, financial professionals always fascinate me because you guys have to build business from scratch. You mm-hmm. have to work off 100% commission, which is scary yeah. for a lot of people, but you guys do it.
Exciting.
You guys are good at right.
It's scary but exciting, Luke. You know, because
yeah.
you have the control. You have the control over your finances.
Wonderful. And over your time as well, right?
Exactly.
And so that's amazing. It's maybe it's a field and a profession more people should consider. And so I'm curious, you know, so many people neglect certain financial services and products that they should have, that everyone should have. Why do you think people neglect doing things like saving for retirement, setting up a will, or buying life insurance, or maybe saving for college for the children or whatnot? Why do people not do this and whatnot? And like you hear about celebrities like Prince and Aretha Franklin dying and not having a will, which is so unfortunate. Why do you think people neglect getting these financial products and services?
In general, it depends. Like, for example, I believe that some people don't want to get life insurance because they don't think that they will die. You know, they don't think it's going to happen to them. Other people say with finances, it's like they always learn that math is difficult and not good with numbers, and they don't know how to calculate how much they will need for retirement. Now people live longer, so you know, if they live longer, it means that they need more money. The retirement is longer than the time they used to work. So I think that there's a lot of fear and a lot of uncomfortable, and also maybe people don't know what they want when they are no longer here. What do they want? How do they want to be buried? Who do they want to give the money to? Sometimes it's it's challenging. It's changing. Yes.
Wow. Thank you so much for that. And it's interesting how so many people neglect insurance. Obviously, more and more people are realizing it as they hear the stories of so many people dying from COVID. There's been a 40% increase, so which is, I guess, the silver lining. But obviously, so many people neglect buying insurance. And it's so important. You know, people don't want to think about dying. It's scary, but it can happen. And they need to, you know, realize what will happen with the children, the family, after they die. Will they be taken care of? And you mentioned how some people may not be comfortable with math, so it's hard to figure out. It's hard for them to figure out how much money they need in retirement. And then people are living longer. But and I guess it's up to folks like yourself to kind of educate folks about this and to guide folks. Right, and to help them overcome their fear and whatnot, and get, you know, buy the, because I think everyone needs to have these products like insurance, a will, and all this kind of stuff. So important. And
so,
I guess,
The price also, you know, that's also very interesting, that when you talk to people, they think that it's more expensive than what it is, like maybe three times more. And then when you come show them that it's not as that expensive as you think, they're like, wow, they don't realize. It's very interesting.
Right. And it's interesting, you know, and so many people need to be aware of that. And obviously it's more expensive if they don't have any insurance, which is what a lot of people need done. So, thank you so much for that. And I'm curious now, obviously there are a lot of financial professionals out there. Sometimes I go to networking events prior to the pandemic, and there are so many financial professionals oftentimes with the same company, particularly New York Life. And I'm curious, a lot of them sell the same or similar products and services. How do you stand out as a financial services professional? Like, what do you do, and what is your, I guess, competitive advantage? How do you differentiate yourself from everyone else?
Sure. I mean, you're right, because when I went to networking, I always saw more people that are doing the same things that I do as far as profession. But you know what? First of all, to be a professional like me, to hire somebody, it's very strict. Like, there's a lot of hiring. It takes time. And then the point is that you meet a lot of people, but they cannot do it, so they don't stay in the business. So you meet them, they're 3 months, and they don't have the grit. They don't have the persistence. They don't have the call. So they don't stay. You know, there are a lot of people. There are millions of people. You know, maybe there are thousands of financial advisors, but there are so many more people, and they need us. They need us there. Now, besides my background and my education, I mentioned that, you know, I'm an immigrant. And as an immigrant, when you go to another country, you have a lot of challenges. You have to have the grit. And I do understand different cultures. Like, it's Japanese culture will be different than the French culture, than an American culture. So I differentiate myself by working a lot with first-generation immigrants that are business owners and families, and this is a part of my niche.
Wonderful. And so I guess there's a lot of different things you do that help you. You have that grit and persistence that's lacking in many. Obviously, a lot of people start off as a financial advisor professional. They don't stick. They give up or they quit. And obviously, you're different, of course, and you have that grit and persistence. And you mentioned you have a niche, so to speak. And, you know, they say it's so important to have a niche. There's a saying, the riches are in the niches, and that's so true. You know, when you focus on it, it sounds corny, but it's so true. And you mentioned how there's a lot of financial professionals, but there are many more people that need financial professionals. That you said the words, they need us, which is so true. And, of course, you also have that immigrant background. So you can relate to other immigrants, first-generation immigrants, and you're a fast learner. You understood you understand the culture of each place that you lived in, and obviously the language, which has helped you. So that's amazing. And so I'm curious, obviously you've helped a lot of folks as a financial professional. Can you tell us the most moving or entertaining stories from your life or career?
That's always emotional, because I can say in general I have a few clients that passed away, and it's not until the first person that passed away that was my client that I understood what I was really, really doing, because I was the only person that came to that family with money, with a check. All the other people came, you know, for the flowers, they came for the bill and for the cemetery with the bill and for, you know, everything was bills, you know. And that was like the point that the thank you that I felt so warm and so so much that I'm doing, that that's what's keeping me going. Because I thought I have this family. Well, this woman, she was only actually 3 months. She had the life insurance, perfect health. And then she got involved into an accident and she died. She left the kids. The husband had mortgage, so with the money, life insurance, they were able to pay the mortgage. The husband and the kids stay in the same place, and the kids are able to go to college with that money. So see, it's good and bad, but you know, so it's a mixed feeling, you know, it's a mixed feeling that wow, I did something like that. I helped a family. And another feeling was like, boy, I wish I would have done more, you know. So that's what kept me going, you know, to go one person, one more person, you know, to be there and help them.
Wow. That's amazing. And thank you so much for sharing these stories. And you obviously mentioned that they're emotional, and I can see why. But you talked about how you can see the importance of what you do when you had that first experience with the client who passed away. And you were able to get that family a check instead of a bill, right? And that's amazing. And you were able to help the family where the woman died in an accident, and they were able to stay in their home, pay off the mortgage, go to college. So that's incredible. Very rewarding work. And obviously you're definitely helping people and whatnot. And so thank you again for sharing these stories. I'm curious, obviously you guys are very good at networking and building relationships. And it's so important, because obviously you want to get to a point where you rely on or mostly or solely on referrals, which makes your life a lot easier. And so it's so important for entrepreneurs and obviously real estate agents, financial professionals to network. But even people who are looking for a job, they say it's great for them to network if they're unemployed. Or even if you have a job, you can find a better job or realize no job is secure, so you still have to keep looking for work and whatnot. So I'm curious, what networking advice would you give to folks?
Well, you know, the first few years that I started the business, I was networking everywhere, anywhere. But I realized that New York is big. There's so many networking. I cannot be everywhere. But then, you know, it's like overwhelming, right? I used to go 7 days a week, I don't know, and then I realized that I had to focus, you know, focus what kind of people I want to work with, you know, and then go and reach out to these people and have groups, and then maybe work with partners, like I can work with estate attorneys or CPAs or mortgage and real estate brokers, so we can refer to each other. Working on this kind of referrals or partnership. So, but I still go and do. You know, it's always networking is always a part of the business. You know, I say to people also, you know, people that are looking for work, sometimes I'm able to help them because I'm the to-go person. Because I know a lot of people, you know, I'm able to help them. Sometimes I even hire people to work with me in the company
Wow.
I work with. Yes. So there's opportunities. We help saving money. We give money. We take money. You know, we do all.
Wow, wonderful. And thank you so much for that. Obviously, you know a lot about networking because oftentimes you'd have to travel and go to a different country where you didn't mm-hmm. know that many people. You have to learn the language and the culture, which is different mm-hmm. from what you're used to. So you know a lot about how to build a network from scratch, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. And when you immigrated to this country, you had to build a network and whatnot. And I really love these successful immigrant stories. And your story mm-hmm. is definitely the epitome of a successful immigrant story. I love that. My parents are immigrants to this country mm-hmm. from Haiti. Mm-hmm. And
so you felt home, right?
Yes, definitely. And they're hard workers. They helped mm-hmm. me to get the education that I have. And I was born and raised in New York City, but mm-hmm. love these successful immigrant stories. And I'm curious, obviously, you realize that you may have been networking maybe a little too much. I think you said you were doing 7 days a week, mm-hmm. Which is a lot. You were everywhere. And you might have maybe been stretching yourself kind of too thin,
yes.
so to speak. But you realize that you have to focus your networking. You mm-hmm. had to focus on who you want to network with to build these referral relationships and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And networking obviously is so important. You've been able to help people find jobs through your wide mm-hmm. network, which is amazing.
Okay.
And you were able, and people could work for you. You helped people do that, which is great. And they say that your network is your net worth, which is so true. The luckiest people in the world have the widest networks. So true. The more you network, the luckier you get. I truly believe that. And so, thank you so much for that excellent advice. I really like the part where you talked about focusing your networking, having targeting your network. Who do you want to network?
Yeah, targeting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and targeting is amazing
yes,
advice.
Fun.
I'm trying. That's how I met you, actually, because I on LinkedIn, I think I sent you a connection request or I reached out
yes.
to you because I'm looking for people who help businesses, and
mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to build networks with people who are B2B professionals like yourself. So it
mm-hmm.
definitely works.
Yes.
There's something to that targeting your networking efforts. Obviously. As a country, we do have our social ills and whatnot, and obviously things like racism, sexism, xenophobia,
mm-hmm.
homophobia. Have
mm-hmm.
you experienced yourself any sexism or discrimination on your journey?
I think probably many people do, maybe as a woman or as a man. Sometimes with some men, we need to always stay professional so it doesn't go to a dating, area. And then with some women, what I find out is some women, actually, they prefer to work with me because I'm a woman. And because we share similar issues and challenges and there is a sisterhood, maybe. I don't know how to call it. But there is something that I can probably help them that maybe they feel more comfortable rather than to be working with a man. But beside that, I think, financial services, it's a male-dominant industry that so many women are there now. So many. So it's changing.
Wow, that's amazing. That's great to hear that it is changing. And obviously, because I think there are women like yourself who've been at it for a while, who serve as role models and inspirations, and it's great that you're able to mentor these female protégés, so to speak, because they can relate to you better with the same challenges and whatnot. It's a sisterhood, a sorority, so to speak. And you talked about the importance of how people should stay professional at all times. And obviously not look to, you know, in the professional world for dating opportunities or whatnot. I think that's great advice. And so that's amazing. And obviously there's a lot of progress to be made. But we can look at one positive sign as we have our first woman vice president, the woman of color. And that's amazing progress. Right. Very historical. And so obviously there's still more that has to be done. So thank you so much for that. I'm curious, obviously, the financial services industry has a negative image for some, a bad reputation or perception. And, you know, we see movies like Wolf of Wall Street and Boiler Room, which were based on true stories of financial service, people selling financial services who were harming and scamming people. I'm curious, what do you think the industry should do to stay to change things, and how have you been able to be successful while maintaining a high ethical standard?
So, you know, from compliance, I don't think people know how strictly the industry is regulated by compliance and what we sign and what we say and what we do. And so it's very, very highly regulated, but still some people probably can do stuff that are not ethical. So I think that, for me, I want to, you know, more bring the awareness and educate people, you know. I believe that most of the people, the advisors that are coming to the business are ethical and they have good reputation, because not everyone can be an advisor. We go through different tests and exams and so background, all different things, so not everyone can do that. You know, fingerprints, stuff like that. So, and you know how it is. Every industry has sometimes a bad apple. So what you need to do is just take out the bad apple from the good apple. That's what I think.
Wonderful. And obviously it's very regulated. I guess in some ways it's getting more and more regulated all the time. You have the SEC and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And you have to pass a lot of tests, get licenses, and there's... you know, it's interesting, and they do background checks, and so hopefully as we progress, you know, things get better on that front. And you said that many of the advisors who come on board are ethical, which is great, which is wonderful. And obviously every industry has bad apples, and they just have to find ways to weed out these bad apples and whatnot. Definitely. Thank you so much for that. I'm curious, what key advice would you give to someone who wants to be a financial advisor, particularly perhaps a woman?
The first instinct that I say is go for it, because especially now, I mean, there's no better time than now. Everything, you know, before COVID, I had to travel a lot. Now I do everything meeting on Zoom. There's a lot of information there. People need us now. This is the time that we shine. We can help. As an immigrant, we have different languages. We have different group. We work with Hispanic. We work with LGBT. We work with everybody, all different groups. And I think that it's a chance for women, especially if they have children, they need some time for themselves to schedule. You know, they cannot work 9 to 5. I think that there is a lot of satisfying and rewarding things in this career. You change people's lives, you know.
Right.
And I think also as a woman, you know, like women are mothers, they're educators and all that. They behave differently than men. I'm not saying one is good or the other one is bad. Both of them are very good. It's just it's different. So I'm open to talk to women if anyone wants to explore it. I'm open for that, to help them.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that. And you, the key advice you gave is that people should just go for it. There's no better time than now. It's like a sort of like a gold rush right now. You can communicate with people on Zoom, which is great. And there's a huge need. In many ways, it's still an untapped market. You know, people need you guys. Millions of people need you guys. So there's enough for everyone. And particularly for women, it's great. And you talked about how women and men are different, and I believe that to be true. I think women operate at a higher ethical, moral plane than men. I think most people would agree with that, including most men. And that women...
I didn't want to say women, anything. I just want to be fair, you know.
No worries. I'll say it. But obviously, this is personal for me. I have two sisters who I care a lot about, and they're both entrepreneurs, one in real estate, another in massage therapy. And so they put me to shame. Yeah, so they're doing great. And so I'm all up for female empowerment and whatnot. And I think as more women enter the business world, particularly financial services, it raises the ethical standard a lot higher, which is, I think, great, of course. And so I think it's so important. Now, obviously, you know, I actually want to tell you a story. During the financial crisis in the country of Iceland, the only banks, I think it was the only bank to succeed that was still that survived the disaster was was the only female run bank. It was a woman run bank, right? True story. And so and a lot of the banks run by men failed. So I'll email you the article about it. And
sure.
So because the women, they didn't take as much, you know, risky bets as the men did.
Yeah.
And so
you know, women usually have 75% of their money cash because they are not that risky. That's interesting service, you know. But anyway, go ahead.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, that's an amazing statistic. I didn't know that. Thank you for sharing it. And I'm curious now, what advice would you give to someone who's looking for a financial professional to work with? Now, they could work with you, which I think is a great decision. But let's say you're busy. Let's say you're on vacation, and let's say you can't help everyone because you're just one person. So what advice would you give to someone who's looking for someone to work with?
Well, you know, we talked about ethical. That's very important, right, to be ethical, to work with somebody that is ethical. But it's important, you know, to work with someone that will listen to your needs, to your pain, that will understand you, that will motivate you. It's not easy. You know, it's like being a personal trainer. If you want to have muscles, you know, you have to commit. You know, so the same thing, very simple. You have to be a cheerleader. You have to commit. I mean, as a financial professional, I have to be sometimes the cheerleader and really put the person into a place of commitment, right? So we can to achieve a better lifestyle. So I think that we have a lot of people around the world with different personalities and different, you know. So a person needs to be open. It has to be able to communicate. It's very important to be able to communicate freely and not to lie and just feel comfortable. That's how I would go.
Okay. It's interesting. I actually had an interview with another financial advisor. He told me that what he does is almost similar to being a life coach. Because money is such an intimate subject, and it ties into a lot of different things. Yeah.
Yes.
And so it's amazing. And, well, you mentioned personal trainer, and I could see that. And it has to be someone you trust, you mentioned. And because you're going to be sharing intimate details with this individual.
Exactly.
And there, it has to be someone you like. They're going to be a cheerleader for you. They have to help you commit. They have to communicate well and above all, be honest. So definitely great advice. Thank you so much for sharing it. And I'm curious now, obviously, you have a lot of education, MBA and MS, a bachelor's, and whatnot. I'm sure you've done a lot of studying, a lot of reading and whatnot. I'm curious, obviously you've been through, you've had many experiences in your life. What important life lessons would you have for that you'd like to share with folks that you've learned yourself or from others along the way?
I think sometimes there are things we learn because we're getting a little bit older, you know, the years. So I think with my career and talking to people and all this, you know, sometimes, you know, we are a little bit, we are calling people maybe, and we are like, oh, we don't want to disturb them. Maybe it's not a good time. We have all these scenarios in our head. And people answer in different ways. It's not personal. So I would say, you know, first of all, don't judge, because sometimes things that they appear differently than what they really are. So if you don't know, don't assume things. You know, you can always ask, you can inquire. You know, I sometimes call my clients and maybe somebody's not there, and I was thinking, oh, something happened, or they don't want to talk to me, but it's not that. They were out of the country, or different things happen to people. So I would say don't judge. We don't know what the other has in their hands, you know, in their situation.
I like that. Obviously, you never know what's going on in someone's life, and you have to not judge, and obviously you don't know a person until you walked a mile in their shoes is a very old saying, and that three letter word I think you mentioned, ASK, you can always do that. So such important vital advice. Thank you so much for sharing it. I'm curious, what book recommendations do you have for folks? It could be books about anything.
Okay. Well, if it's something, you know, about finance and all that, there are some famous ones like Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, or The Millionaire Next Door, right? But I was thinking about children books. You know which one I like? I like the Dr. Seuss. I like All the Places You'll Go. You know, I don't know if you know that story, but it's really nice. And then there is also another story by Shel Silverstein, The Giving Tree. So these kids ones, that they have a lot of learning things in there, you know, if you read them about life.
Wonderful. Wow. That's great. You gave us a few classics like Think and Grow Rich and Millionaire Next Door. Great books to read, particularly Millionaire Next Door. And you gave us a few children's books. Yes, I've actually read both books. I love both of them. And you also mentioned some children's books. The Giving Tree by Shel Silverstein, I think his name is. And Dr. Seuss. Right. And Dr. Seuss, the Places You'll Go. Amazing. It's interesting. I think I read these books a long time ago. I haven't read them recently. May have to reread them soon. And I think you're the first person to give me these children's books as an answer to this question, which I think is amazing. And it's interesting how so many truths are learned in books for children, and so many important values are learned in kindergarten, actually. So true. I think a famous person once said, everything I needed to know, I learned in kindergarten, which is so true in many ways.
It's the first 6-7 years of your life. I think that's where you're
right.
Learning.
It's so true. They say a person's personality starts to develop within that time. So true. And so I'm curious, would you ever write a book yourself?
I don't know where shall I start from. It's going to be voluminous volumes. There's a lot of stories.
Wow.
Who knows? There's a lot of stories. I mean, maybe about life. I don't know, maybe about career, about the people, the wonderful and strange and different people that I meet, thousands. I mean, many, many people. Mm. That's amazing. Mm. Yes.
Wow. That's incredible, because obviously you've lived an amazing life so far. You've gone to Belgium, Israel, so many different places. You've mentioned so many stories, and you've met thousands of people.
Mm-hmm.
That's just incredible. If you ever do write that book, I definitely want to buy it. So you have at least one customer. I'll be the first person online. I'll read it. Okay. You have to start somewhere.
Oh, yes.
So,
yeah,
so keep
sweet.
Me posted. All right. And mm-hmm. Are you ever going to start your own podcast? I think you'd be great as a podcast host, maybe about finance or.
I don't know. I haven't thought about that.
Okay. Well, I think you do a great job. There's a marketing guru named Seth Godin who says everyone should have a podcast.
Yes.
And that you're familiar with him. He's bald-headed with glasses.
Seth Godin, yes. I'm familiar with him, very much so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you've read a lot of his books, right? Yeah. He says that everyone should have a podcast and that podcasting is the new blogging. So something to consider. It's easy and free to do with Anchor. So, yeah, I think you'd make a great podcast host. All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're very knowledgeable. You know a lot about finance. You're very passionate. You can feel the passion in your voice and whatnot. So amazing. And so something else to consider, okay? And if you do start a podcast, I'd be a listener, so you have at least one person.
Oh, you'll be my guest.
Right? I'd love to be a guest. Yes, yes.
I'll think about it. I'll talk to you about it.
All right. Wonderful. And it's real easy to set up. Okay. And podcasting, by the way, is very good for networking. It helps you build relationships. Yeah, it helps you start relationships by offering value to the other person, which is great, of course.
I do seminars, webinars, free consultations. So it's a bit different. Probably podcasting is for more people, I would think.
Right.
You reach more people.
Mm-hmm. Right. And people who listen to podcasts tend to have more education, more money. And so, right, yeah, something to consider. Okay. And the other thing is, I wanted to go ahead and thank you for being a guest on the show. This conversation has been enlightening and educational and inspiring. It's been beyond amazing. It's blown away my expectations. Can you go ahead and describe all the ways that people can reach out and get in touch with you, connect with you, so they can use, or if they know someone who can use your services, or to put a dynamic center of influence in their network?
Mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, you know, we all use now all these social media. You know, I have a web page in New York Life website. Then I'm on LinkedIn and Facebook. People can email me. I can give my personal email, which will be easier. It's my last name, Roshur2000@gmail.com. And I like the old way to call. I mean, people can text me too, but calling me, 917-496-4449.
Wonderful. So, thank you so much for that. And that information that you just provided will be available in the episode description box so people can see it and read it there. All right. Thank you so much. And
Thank you.
You got it. I'm honored to have you as a guest on the show. And you have an amazing story. Okay. And thank you to the audience for listening. I'm going to see you guys in the next episode. Is there any last word or final send-off you wanted to mention?
I just want to thank you for the opportunity for me to speak and bring awareness and reach people. I really appreciate that.
Oh, you got it. Well, I really appreciate you coming on as a guest. And thank you so much for coming on. Again, thank you to the audience. I'll see you guys in the next episode. Everyone have a wonderful, blessed day. Thank you so much. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, guys, before you go, just real quick, if you can just do me a favor, if you can head over to the Apple Podcasts app, and if you're not there already, and if you can leave me a 5-star review, that would be great. If you love the show, if you can just go ahead and do that, and that will help to spread the word about the show, and other people can enjoy the show as much as you do. And so if you can do that, that would mean the world to me. And also, if you want to email me with any feedback or any praise or support, please feel free to go ahead and do that. And you can also email me to request to be put on our email list. So we can send you out emails when new episodes come out. So thank you very much for being a fan of the show. Thank you for listening to the show and supporting the show. So if you can do that, go out and give us a 5-star review on the Apple Podcast app. That would be great. And if you can email us so we can put you on the email list and email us with feedback and praise, that would be amazing. Thank you so much, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Take care. Bye-bye.